Hey, can we thank the worship team just for what they've been doing? You know, for some of you, if I came to your job and kind of followed you around, there'd probably be things that I wouldn't see how difficult that it actually is. But for a worship team at a camp who don't know the speakers that are coming every week and don't know their personality, don't know what they're speaking on, don't know really, yeah, very much, for them to have to like stay grounded and like steer the ship, I think they've done a really, really great job. So Jordan, well done. This is awesome. Great job. Okay, so we began the week. It was Father's Day, and we had the fathers stand up, and we just spoke some words of encouragement, called out some truths. I like when we get to the end of the week because we see who can grow a beard and who can't, Sky, and so it's fantastic. But what we also see too is just some amazing people who have just served. And dads, I've already given you some love. And so what I thought I would do is have all of the moms and the grandmas and the women, the ladies, would they just stand up for a second? Awesome. You're like, what are you going to make me do? Nothing. You just remember the first kind of part of the word of the verse that we looked at was like to receive. And so here's what I would love. I would love love for you men just to go in and just say a word of thanks. Say a word of just appreciation. And you can't do what guys do, which is say something and then say a joke, okay? Can't do that, okay? You have to look them in the eye, and you got to say something and like take a moment, just think about it, and just here's one thing I appreciate. One thing I appreciate. One thing I respect. And I know not everyone might be married here. I know some are getting married. I know some might be daughters. But you matter. And so if maybe one of your daughters is here and they're not married, I just want you to go up to her and I want you to like speak a word of just appreciation, what you see of Christ in her. And so I'm just going to pick up a guitar and strum. Not really, I just broke my own rule. But I wasn't giving a word of encouragement. What I would love for you to do is I'd love just for you to have this moment and just say thank you. And maybe there's something you saw, something you just this week you're thankful. Maybe this past year you're thankful, or maybe you're like me and you're just thankful that some woman said yes to you 15 years ago who's way out of your league. Just use that line. So just whatever it is that you're appreciative of, speak that in, call that out. You have space. Go. I only could play two songs. You got teary-eyed. I know, that's a man, well done. And man, good job, well done. Dude, see? All things are possible. That is awesome. 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 Well, hey, thanks for doing that. I just think it's important. Sometimes we hold those words back, and there's power in our words. And those words remind us of who we are in Christ. And anytime you see it, in your daughter, and your son, and your grandson, speak that out. Speak that out. Call that out. I think that there's something powerful when we speak things into existence And that's the faith that we get to keep stepping in. When you see that in a spouse or a daughter or a son, it's powerful stuff, or a husband. So we've been on a little bit of a journey. We looked at this passage in Colossians, this idea of Pax Romana. And I don't know if you have that verse from Colossians. We'll put it up. It says, "So then, just as you received Christ, Jesus is Lord, continue to walk in him, rooted and built up in him, strengthened in the faith as you were taught and overflowing with thankfulness." And so kind of what I've tried to do, hopefully you see this, is just try to take some kind of different teachings that kind of bring out certain themes. And so the idea at the very beginning was, man, we couldn't have like achieved Christ. We only can receive Christ. And then talked about walking in him, being a disciple, walking in the dust of a rabbi, the rooted idea that we are, he is the vine, we are a branch, and there is a God who is a gardener, who is pinching and pruning. We're being built up, and I just took us to Caesarea Philippi, and we're being strengthened in the faith, so there's a sense where we can go and retreat, but we're no longer slaves to fear. We want to actually go out and just continue to take this within culture and proclaim where truth is, and overflowing with thankfulness. And this is just a beautiful sense of just being the kind of people who are filled with joy. But there was something that happened yesterday, last night, and I was sitting and was watching and listening to Todd share a story, and kind of, and this wasn't talked about, this is just something I kind of felt last night. Todd shared a story, and then Craig got up and kind of showed those stones. And I remember just thinking about the idea of like a stone. And you have to understand that in the ancient Near East, whenever God did anything, they wanted to mark a moment. And so one of the ways that they would mark a moment is they would name a place. Somehow they would name the city, and that city would take on a story because of something that God did. Or sometimes they'd build an altar. They'd just take a whole bunch of rocks, and they'd build an altar. They'd sacrifice an animal, and they would just kind of allow that to be an aroma pleasing to the Lord. If you've ever been driving on the freeway in Southern California, and you're driving, and all of a sudden you smell In-N-Out, that was an aroma pleasing to the Lord. Like, In-N-Out was one of the first to put the fans above the grill and strategically angle the chimney to go right over the freeway. And so you would be driving and you're like, I just have to get off now. And so that's the idea. There's something powerful, like when you smell a Weber grill, like it just, or a Traeger, you know, like, so it just, that was the aroma. And they wanted to offer the very best meat, the very best sacrifice to God. But there was another way. There's another way in which they would kind of mark a moment, mark a place that God actually did something. And they wanted it to be a way to tell a profound story. And so if you have a Bible, turn with me to Joshua. We'll begin there, and then we'll jump to the New Testament, to 1 Peter. We'll start in chapter 3, verse 1, Joshua, 6th book of the Bible. Interesting fact about Joshua, Jesus, the Hebrew name for Jesus is the word Joshua, Yeshua, kind of what we'd say. Verse 1 says this, "Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim," say it very quickly and move on, "and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priests carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the Ark. Do not go near it." Now, just a little bit of context. You know that the Hebrew people had been in slavery 430 years. 430 years in slavery to Egypt, right? And what's really just kind of profound to me that I think is pretty amazing is 430 years they're in slavery. How long do you think the gap between the Old Testament and the New Testament was? 400 years. And then how long was Jesus around before he was a rabbi? 30 years. So 430, 430. The math in the Bible is crazy when you begin to think about it. Even Pentecost and 3,000 people come to faith, there is a story where 3,000 people died. So, like, all of a sudden, when you begin to read this, it's just unbelievable. Like, people say, like, oh, there's nothing. There is so much in this book. It's so powerful. So, they are in slavery. Then they find themselves walking in the wilderness for 40 years. 40 years. I was telling this to someone. It's one thing to leave Egypt. It's another thing to have Egypt leave you. For some of us, we've carried struggles and addiction and pride and just trauma and pain. And maybe we've left that situation, but that situation really hasn't left its grip on us. And this is why God put the people in the wild, in the desert, in the wilderness, to set them free, to heal their heart. And now they're about ready to enter into the promised land. And what goes before them is this Ark of the Covenant. Ark of the Covenant was the sense where we often say, like, I'm not going to put God in a box. What's so crazy is God put himself in a box called the Ark of the Covenant. You couldn't touch it. You couldn't look at it. If you got close to it and looked at it, you were dead because of the glory, the Shekinah glory of this. And yet, there would be people who would just be carrying this. Now, what's amazing is it continues on. Joshua, verse 5, told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. It's just so awesome. Speaking it into existence. Verse 6, Joshua said to the priests, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up, went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all of Israel so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. And Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, just read it with authority and go quickly. Amorites and Jebusites, see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. Now, quick time out. The Jordan River kind of begins at like the base of Mount Horeb. Mount Horeb is like one of the largest mountains to the Hebrew people, and it like basically goes from Mount Horeb all the way straight down to the Jordan River and straight down to the Dead Sea. It is the fastest flowing river at flood stage. You don't just like walk into it, or you get the greatest tube ride of your life, right? You just go flying down. So this is kind of like a scary, scary thing that God is calling. Second thing you have to know, anytime you cross a body of water in Hebrew understanding, it was as if you were turning the page. It's metaphorical. Something is about to change. There's something on the other side. There's something new that is to begin. Now, continues on. Verse 14, so when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest, yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the sea of the Arabah, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight. Now here's where we're going to spend time in verse 4 through 8. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. See, in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. Now, I'll just stop right there and say this. If you heard me reading that, it can seem really repetitive. It's like God says it, and then the Bible says it again, and then it happens, says it again. It's it's like my wife is talking to me. She's just like, says it again, and says it again, and then I do it. Like, it's like you see this. It's such a human book. Now, what you'll see is in the middle of the Jordan, there are the 12, there are like the priests who are holding up the Ark of the Covenant. Everybody can get by. Then one person from each tribe comes and gets a massive standing stone, picks it up, walks back to the other side, and sets it up, puts it up. So sometimes you name a place. Sometimes, like in Exodus, you write a song when you cross the Red Sea. Sometimes you build an altar. This time, God says, I want you to get massive standing stones. Why? Because there's no internet. There's no libraries, there's no photographs, there is no like encyclopedias, remember those? There's none of that stuff. Because one day your son or your daughter is going to be walking with you or your mother or a rabbi, and they're going to see these stones, and they're going to look at these stones, and they're going to go, Daddy, Mom, Rabbi, Rabbani, what do these stones mean? Or in Hebrew, the phrase is masavot. And literally means, what happened here? Masavot. And in this moment, when the father or the mother would stand next to this massive stone, or the rabbi would stand next to the massive stone, he would say, oh, can I tell you what happened here? This is where God raised up Joshua and told Joshua to get the priests to grab the Ark of the Covenant, to be brave and strong and courageous, to stand in the water and allow the Hebrew people to cross over so that we could live in a land of milk and honey, the promised land. And I love this idea because it was an opportunity for the Hebrew people to keep their story alive. Masavot, what happened here? Now, when you get to the New Testament, you see Peter kind of taking this idea, and he takes it a little bit farther. And the truth is, every day, people are watching you. They watch the way you lead. They watch the way you love. They watch the way that you extend grace. They watch the way that you interact with your kids, interact with your wife or your husband or your family. They watch you. And whether you know it or not, people are constantly viewing and seeing. And like I said earlier in this week, like what we choose to do, to say, it's an invitation for us to proclaim what we truly believe is the best possible way to live. And so Peter has some words. 1 Peter chapter 2. Just move to the book of James and go one book over. 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter will say these words. And Peter's writing to a church that is undergoing a lot of persecution. This church is like separated all over, and they're kind of fearful. And so what they're choosing to do is basically sit on the sidelines and hide. They're kind of fearful. And so Peter is trying to challenge them, encourage them, and invite them into a better way of life. And so he tells them in the first part of chapter 2, verse 1, therefore rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up in your salvation, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. And then it says this, as you come to him, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now to you who believe, the stone is precious, but to those who do not believe, The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, and a stone that causes people to stumble, and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. And then this is what it says, verse 11 and 12. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Okay, a lot of stuff going on here, but what's he saying? He's saying, you all, like Jesus, are a living stone. And he kind of mixes a little metaphors right now. In one sense, he goes, hey, in one way, you're a stone that's being built up into a spiritual house. He talks about that. He talks about how Jesus was the rejected cornerstone. And scholars will talk about how they would cut massive stones at a quarry and they would move it to the Temple Mount. And when you get to King Solomon's temple, which is only 5 acres, they brought over a cornerstone that they thought was going to be the first stone that they basically built off of. But the truth is, the architect didn't like it. And so scholars say that they left a massive stone outside of King Solomon's temple, and it became this sense of, you built that temple on the wrong stone. And they used that as like a metaphor for like the Messiah. And so then he goes, hey, but honestly, you're these living stones that you ought to, because you're chosen people, you're royal priesthood, you're a holy nation, you're God's special possession, that you ought to live such holy, such set apart, such consecrated, such good Christ-like lives that though the pagans accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and do what? Glorify God on the day he visits us. What's Peter saying? That people who have no sense of faith or people who do have faith ought to look at your life and say, massive vote. What happened here? Really, 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 really. Your life ought to be a compelling force for good. Your life ought to demand questions. And that's fascinating to me. Because I don't know how many of our lives, I don't know how often our lives are demanding the kind of questions that this book is hoping for. Instead of being like, what happened there? You know, there's this curiosity. I want to know your story. There's this sense of like, it's so peculiar, so different, so countercultural. In many ways, like, it's so invitational. But oftentimes, we're being told things about what we are. They're just hypocrites. They're just this. They're just this. They're just... And when you read like 1 Peter... I mean, Peter's challenging, not for the church to be on the sidelines, again, for them to be in Caesarea Philippi, for them just to be in the middle of it, living in such brave and courageous and generous and holy lives. And you get to chapter 3, verse 15, it says this, but in your hearts revere Christ as Lord. And then he says this verse that I've never understood until I understood Masavot. He says this, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. That's Peter. Chapter 3, verse 15. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks for the hope that you have. Why? Because your life ought to be demanding questions. Your life ought to be demanding questions. And so here's what I just want us to spend some time thinking about. What questions in the last year has your life forced people to ask? And this is like kind of like really, really, I feel like Jesus-like stuff. Is sometimes we think about, okay, here's like what I want to achieve, here's the goal. I started to really think, like, hey, what are the questions that I want my life to force people to ask? And then when I get asked those questions, will I have the courage to actually speak where I found that hope? I'm a huge Johnny Cash fan. Love Johnny Cash. Think he's just incredible. Guy wore all black, which is just awesome. But he wore all black because he realized he was a broken individual. Just a broken man. And he realized the power of a stage, that you could stand on a stage and just all the lights and all the attention and all of it, it could begin to warp you. And he really just wore black because he just said, I am depraved. There's just brokenness in me, beauty and brokenness. And the people that I sing to are like the misfits, are the broken, the people in Folsom. And I there's something there. And if you've ever seen Walk the Line, that movie, there's a scene where he was in a three-piece gospel band. And he goes to Memphis where Elvis and others had gotten signed, and he's fired up. He's gonna get a record deal, he thinks, and so he starts to play, and they're like, you know, just playing a little gospel hymn, and the guy who's working on the board just starts to check out. I mean, in our day, that person would have been on their phone doing email, but this person's doing something else, and Johnny realizes it, and he stops and he goes, "Why aren't you listening? Why do you not like it?" And then the guy says, "I just don't believe that you believe what you're singing. Sing something that matters." And Johnny, in this moment, shares a song that he had never shared publicly before. You read his biographies, you can learn about this. His brother had died. His dad had blamed him for his older brother's death. And so Johnny ends up writing this song, and it is honest, and it's vulnerable, and it's human, and he sings it, and all of a sudden, this is what you see. You see the guy lean in, put his headset on, start playing with levels, and says, "I'll sign that." Here's what I need you to understand. What the world is looking for is honest and human. What the world is looking for is people who are faith-filled and faithful. We're not necessarily needing 9-syllable words and you to have all the answers. What we're looking for is people who are just going to constantly put themselves out there in the middle and just simply say, "Hey, I want you to be able to look at my life, and I want to be able to forgive in a way, and I want to be able to be generous in a way, and I want to be able to be gracious and loving and kind and truthful. I want to be that in a culture that just really isn't anymore. I think it really used to be, but I don't think it is to this day." And in this moment, when we step into that, it's going to be so countercultural that people are going to look at it and say, "Massive vote." And then you all will have an invitation to say, "Why are you that way? Why are you that way?" And in that moment, you're going to have to do something that oftentimes people don't want to do, but you get the chance to say, "Because of Jesus. Because of what I received, because of what was rooted and built up in me, because of the strength that he gave to me, and because of that, it just is overflowing." I find myself now more fascinated, not just with people who can transfer information or teach me something. I'm so fascinated with people who are living these brave and courageous lives, who are taking risks beyond, I think, their own ability to speak out, to speak truth, to love, to be in the middle, just to constantly try to live a life. And I look at that and I go, "Man, Massive Oat, what happened there?" And I've had the privilege to sit with some of these people. And then I sit with them and I hear there came a moment where they simply said, "We are going to live our lives for something greater than ourselves." And that's beautiful. And I was thinking this morning, and this is just all just kind of came last night. I started thinking, and I had a different talk that I wanted to do, but I just started thinking about these stones that were passed out for Fort. And really thinking about, for some families that I know who have been going here for 28 years, kind of even looking up at this picture, and I don't even know who these two people are relationally, and obviously know who they are, and knowing that those two poured into some really dear friends of mine that shaped and formed them. And last summer when I was here, I said, yeah, I'm up in Wisconsin. You probably can't get reception because where I'm at, but I'm talking with them. And I started to tell them I'm at Fort Wilderness, and this guy just starts to break down and goes, if it wasn't for him and if it wasn't for Fort, I don't think I would be where I'm at. And I'm like, what? You were blessed by this place? And he started telling me about how he was discipled here. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And for some of you, this is like your first year, 12 families. And I'm like, that's incredible. And yet, you're getting this sense to like build this sense, this altar. For some of you, you've been coming for year after year after year, and you can remember story after story, or place on the lake, or moment around a campfire, or moment when like you were in an RV because there was no room at the inn, and you felt like biblical, and like, you know, there's just like, you remember, and you remember like Wednesday, and you just remember what God did. And then you came back, and somehow there was some kind of unit around your family, and you would find other people looking at your family going, and they didn't know Hebrew, but what they were asking is like, masavot. What happened? Like, your marriage was like on the rocks. But there's something that like happened. And I'll be like so candid, I don't know any other way, but like, I'm a achiever. Like, that's all I know how to do. Highly competitive. And when we had Emerson, and they handed us to him, and it was a really, really difficult pregnancy and difficult like delivery, and the cord was wrapped around his neck a couple times, and I didn't know like how serious it was, but it was really, really serious. But when they handed him to me, I had all of these expectations for what a father was going to be. I mentioned that my dad died. He was my adopted father. My biological father was out of the picture pretty early. And all of a sudden, I'm just standing here holding a child. I really don't have a map. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I don't know how to do this. I 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 didn't know how to do this, if this makes sense. And in my mind, I thought being a father was going to be like working on our triple threat and our jump shot. And being in the front yard every day. Just working, 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 getting him ready for Duke or Michigan. You know what I mean? Like, you just start, you know, like, this is what it's going to be, man. We're gonna do this. He doesn't like basketball. and he likes different things. So what do you do with that? Because in my head, it was this. And now God's given me this. And all of a sudden, I have to change this perspective and join this. And yet, what God was doing through Emerson was healing some of the broken pain and wounds within me. And you know where he did that? Here. Here. And it was just this unique place that we came up 3 years ago, and we had 1 week together. And it was just at night having conversations. In the morning, having conversations. And little by little, all he talked about the next week, the next year, was, are we going back to Fort? I was like, I hope they invite me to go back to speak. But yeah, like I think so. And we just found ourselves coming back. And in the 3 years that we've been here, this has become a staple, almost this memorial stone, this mark of like, here are conversations that we want to have, to talk about faith, to talk about sex, to talk, like to have these kinds of conversations at night and literally just talking through this stuff. And it's here. And so I say all this to go, man, God is writing a story in you. And it's a brave thing to take a week to go to the Northwoods of Wisconsin. And yet when you become intentional with those weeks, when you become faithful with those weeks, all of a sudden over decades, over years, the way that your faith increases, the ways in which you get to step out, and the truth is, other families aren't making that same kind of commitment, that same kind of investment. And how you invest in that family creates the stories that you get to write and to give away. Does this all make sense? And so I want to like just spend a couple moments, and I want to give this time for you and your spouse, or you just personally, if you're here, or you, because I know that I think there's two couples that are going to be engaged by the next time Fort happens. But like, or married. What I want you to think about is just, I want to lead you in some questions, okay? And you don't have to have answers. You don't have to have answers. And some of you are going to hate this, and I'm bummed that they're doing the evaluations later. I was hoping they would do it. I'm just kidding. I don't care. But I want you just to think about these questions. Maybe for some of you, it's just writing them down. Maybe for some of you, it's just like, oh, I know what that is. And my hope is that this might just be a framework for you all just to think about, hey, what's the next 6 months of 2019 going to be? How do we take what happened here at Fort and continue that? Continue that. And again, we can't recreate the lake in our backyard. I wish we could, especially in Phoenix. But how do we do this? So take a moment. If you're sitting near your spouse, great. If you need to move. But maybe if you've got paper, great. If you got a phone, you can bring it out. I'm not going to get mad. But like, just take a moment, and I'd love just to ask you a few questions, okay? Sound good? All right. If you have to shuffle seats, you can. If not, you're all perfectly set. And this will only go for about 10 minutes, okay? So just know, just from a time standpoint. Because I always, as a guy, hate when I don't know how long it's going to take. So the first question I want to ask is just simply this. And it's a bit of a leadership question, but this. For the next 6 months, what will be your family's anthem? Okay, so I'll just explain this for a second. I think it's important that families have some sense of like anthem. For us last year, you heard it was this phrase, Rock Shizak. It was like, we're gonna be strong, courageous. It was just biblical, it was that. A year before that, it was We Against the World. sounded like a little like We Are the World, but like we just had like these phrases that it was for my wife and I. We were just trying to like get even closer and closer, and saying like, no, hey, it's We Against the World. We gotta focus this. But what's a phrase for you, an anthem for you, and for sometimes it's just up on the refrigerator. Sometimes it's just something that you pray into. And I'm not asking for you to know this right now. Maybe for some of you do. But when you have that kind of phrase, it becomes something that you as a family can talk about. Becomes something that you all can have. So there's an anthem, and underneath that anthem are like, how does that anthem play out in certain areas? And so what we said was, and this is kind of stolen from Patrick Lencioni, but who wrote an amazing family book. It didn't sell at all, which is crazy, but it's really, really good. But basically, the three ideas would be, what are like three buckets that you want to focus in on? OK, okay? Three buckets that you want to focus. So maybe for you, it was kind of like that drum idea that I talked about, something spiritual, something emotional, something physical, something like mental, something marital, something financial, something personal, something that ends just with AL, I guess. So, but like whatever those buckets might be, okay? So think anthem, then think buckets, A, B. Anthem, buckets. Then underneath the A, B, anthem, buckets, what's the challenge? You know what I mean? So A, B, C. Right? See where this is going? Anthem, buckets, challenge. And the challenge is, okay, so if you've got physical, and I try to always attach a verse or a song lyric or something that just makes that a little bit more memorable or sticky, and say it's physical, and it's like, okay, your body's a temple, right? And underneath that, okay, the challenge, you might have some great challenge that you want to accomplish. Let's get crazy. Run a marathon, which would be a terrible idea, but like, because who does that? But like, so you've got marathon as the challenge, right? It might be another big challenge. 52 date nights. Crazy challenge, right? So that's there, okay? Like, say maybe marital was one of the buckets. 52 date nights. We're going to try and do this, okay? Again, here's what I know. You don't drift towards actual health and growth. It just doesn't happen. You have to have intentionality. Or as my mentor says, you have to be deliberately intentional. Okay, so anthem, buckets, challenge, okay? And then I deviate from A, B, C, because D is just a hard word, all right? But you've got to name obstacles, okay? So anthem, buckets, challenge, obstacles. For some of you, I'm already stressing you out, but just stay with me. Anthems, buckets, challenge, obstacles. And the obstacles is, what is going to be the wall or the barrier or the obstacle that's going to prevent you from actually getting this? Anthems, buckets, challenges, obstacles. And you've got to name it. You've got to name it. And sometimes our challenges are unrealistic. And so you have to go back and go, that's just not going to happen. In this life stage, 52, when I travel so much, probably is not going to happen. So I have to go and readjust. So what does that look like? And name that. And then the other parts is I just try to break it down into the most winnable short-term goals. Okay? So anthem, buckets, challenge, obstacles, and then short-term wins, okay? So for instance, I have been running, and I started out doing 5 miles in an hour, which is fantastic for me. And my short-term win was, I'm going to go up every week 0.3. So I went to 5.3 the next week. I went to 5.6, I went to 5.9, I went to 6.2, I went to 6.5, I went to 6.8, then I went back to 6.5 because I felt comfortable, then I went back to 6.8, and I went back to 7.1, I went to 7.1, got up to 7.4, stayed there for a little while. But literally, it was like short-term goals, wins, wins, wins. And sometimes we create these expectations that we're going to be, again, I go back to it, Nick on the piano when I'm actually me on the piano. And I can't get to where Nick is on the piano or even where Asher is at on the piano unless I start slowly building. And we all know this, but we don't give ourselves grace or kindness to get there. And so I use physical or marital. I don't know what that might be for you and your kids. I don't know what that would be for you and your spouse. I don't know what that would be for you and God. And so typically what I'll do is I will have a character one and I will have a personal goal one. And the character one is, God, I need to learn humility. I need to learn, and I write those three down. Well, how am I going to learn humility? How are you going to learn that? And so then you start to work on that. And by that, I've just tried to say, to take profound intentionality, character, and then personal goals to actually take those steps. And I think when I begin to start thinking, man, I want to live a life that like begs people to ask bigger questions or ask questions of me, it wasn't happening when I just was like showing up like, hey. But the more that I got focused, the more that I was trying to grow in certain areas of my life, I spent like 3 years like focusing in on evangelism. I just wanted to get better at talking about Christ. I wanted to get better at talking about Christ with people who were like, that I didn't even know. And I just kept, I got an anthem, I had a bucket, and my anthem for that season was, make the good news your life's work. And the bucket was, I'm going to talk about Jesus. And I literally just started creating moments. And here were my like four rules. If I saw anybody that wore a sports shirt, I was going to have a conversation with them, which my wife could not stand. And I'd be walking and I'm like, really? You're a North Carolina fan? Like, and I would just start that way. Like literally, you have academic violations. That's like, let's talk about that. And Sarah's like, how are you talking about Jesus? But with guys in sports or even like women in sports, you can just give it to each other and then just start talking and then, okay, where are you from? Raleigh. Oh, Raleigh. Awesome. Never been there. What do you do? And it just started to slowly, and I started like talking about Jesus. Wouldn't have happened if I didn't challenge myself. Wouldn't have happened if I didn't spend time with God and God said, I want you to speak more about me. It wouldn't have happened if I didn't make that anthem. And it takes work, but when you get that work down and you've got that anthem, you've got that buckets for personal or familial, family, or for like character, man, stuff can happen. And then I think you end up building these stones where you can look back and go, can I tell you what God did? What God did in me, through me, and for his glory. And that's what I hope, and that's what I feel like is so sacred about this place. But I hope that this place isn't once a year. I hope that this place is like a kickstart, like a refill, like a pushing, a compelling just shaking that sends you out to say, man, I want to do our dinner tables different. I want to do our schedules different. I want to look at the word with our families different. I want to live in our neighborhood different. I want to go after the strongholds of our city different. I want us to like live generous, Christ-like lives different, because what we've received and how we're walking and how we're being rooted and built up and how we're being strengthened, man, I just want that thankfulness to overflow into every area of my life. And when you do that, I kid you not, you will be in the most random places and people will literally look at you and say, Masavot. And then you'll be like, I remember hearing a message about this. I got to have a story to tell. And you will find yourself doing what Johnny Cash did. You will go back and you will start to speak words that maybe you don't even believe. And there will be this reminder, just probably almost the still small voice of Jesus and the Holy Spirit just going, just tell him what I did. Tell him what I did in you. And you'll be like, eschatological sanctification. You'll be like, nope, just going to put that over here. And you're going to say, this is who I was. And this is what he did. And it will be so real and so human. And you'll watch family and neighbors, kids and friends say, I want that. I want that. And that's my prayer for you. My prayer is for your families to be stronger. My prayer is for your faith to be stronger. And my prayer is that for you to be bolder in leading and living and loving Christ and those that he's put in your sphere. God, that's my prayer. I pray that you would just move in a mighty and powerful way. I pray that every one of us in the coming months would really get intentional about what you're asking of us in this season. For thousands of years, disciples have been intentional, whether through practices, whether through even just the arrangement of their calendar or their day, but to train up their kids, to teach them your ways, to imitate the ways of your son. And so, God, I pray that we would all find an anthem for the season. And it's just for us. It's just between us and you. And I pray that we get crystal clarity on like what some of those buckets could be that you're really wanting to shape or teach or have us live into or live out of in this season. And I pray that we would challenge ourselves. Because when you have great challenges, man, I know for me, it just changes the way that I pray. It has me on my knees. It has me trying to fast because it's just so far beyond me. God, I pray that you would just give people challenges that are going to instill convictions of steel within their character, but also just the sense of becoming who you intended them to be. And yet, as we heard earlier this week when Todd was sharing, the enemy is alive, he's active, and he doesn't want these families to win. He wants to distract us. He wants to just break us up. And God, we've got to name that. We've got to name from our own stories how these obstacles have just, these old wounds, these old sin patterns can get in the way of the good that you want to do. And so God, give us courage to name that with our spouse, name that as a family. But also give us opportunities to have these short-term wins, to these opportunities where we're able just to step into a little bit more of who you called us to be. We are not in a sprint. We are in a long marathon. And obedience, as Eugene Peterson says, it's just the going the long distance in the same direction. And so give us courage, step by step, doing good, deep, rooted, built-up work because we've received grace and kindness and mercy from you. And help us live lives that demand questions. Help us live lives that force people to say, Masavot, and give us the courage to proclaim that we are a chosen people. Not by what we've done, but by what we've received from you and the Spirit and your Son. We love you, God, and all God's people said, amen. Thank you.